Ring the bell. We've done it again. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates to 4.875 fixed. Lower your monthly payment, get cash out, pay off credit cards, and best of all, make no mortgage payments for 2 months. Lock in this incredible 4.875 rate and get your cash in as little as 14 days. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
5.81 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Video stream up and running on Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, X. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5. The Fan makes it very easy. You get a little alert sometimes also when videos and shorts are posted on YouTube. Every once in a while, I'll be like, even on Saturday, and I'll get a little pop-up on my YouTube account. It says, hey, did you see?
96.5 The Fan had some new stuff out, and you're like, appreciate the heads up.
Mm-hmm.
Always a good idea. Just a regular Tuesday. You guys got any big plans? I got to go vote.
Oh, it is election day in some parts of the metro area.
For my part, it's really just two school boards, which I'm not running for, as you know yet.
Smart.
Just you wait. One of these days, I'm gonna fulfill that promise, and I'm gonna run for my kid's school board. And then, yeah, I think there's a tax thing related to, you know, helping schools pay for stuff. And mine, that's it. It's only three things. Very small ballot today. Vote in everything, Cole. That's what I tell people. I vote for all the small ones.
I agree, man. I think it's important. I think it's important as well. You guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. With that, the college basketball season is over after last night. It's over.
Got the final game.
It is on to soon-to-be NBA play-in tournament, I think, is a week or so away. The Masters are later on this week. Obviously, baseball is still just getting going here, 10 games into the season. But the Florida Gators, national champs for the first time since they went back-to-back. And
the Billy Donovan era.
Yep. It was Billy Donovan, Joakim Noah, I think, or whatever. Right.
He'd been out of the league for years now at this point. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's how long ago it was. But the Florida Gators erased a 12-point deficit against Houston. Third largest comeback in men's national championship history. We can get into some of the bigger storylines, like where's Todd Golden at now in college basketball? One of the youngest head coaches to ever win a national championship. So
youngest since Valvano is what I saw yesterday.
Yeah. So like there's something to be said there. Overall, like I was very much entertained last night. I think the final four, the three games we got from Saturday to Monday, absolutely delivered for what you hope you would get in college basketball with the four number one seeds. We got the one versus one, of course, in the national title game because of that. And while the final 2 minute stuff is what we all agree and complain about in college basketball, like the reviews are ridiculous. It's absurd. The constant waving your finger, asking for review stuff has been going on for years is absolutely annoying. But I don't get why you wouldn't have enjoyed that basketball game. There are complaints about college basketball in general that we all have, but that game in particular was as good as you can ask for, I think, in a national title game.
This is what's fun, I guess, about doing sports radio. Did not enjoy it. Not like the final, the little bit of the drama at the end, I would say, right? Although the final possession, wow, Houston.
What the heck?
What a mess, right? So like we could spend 20 minutes just breaking that down. What was
your plan? Three straight possessions.
What was your plan to score? Their final four possessions in the last 2 minutes of the game were turnover, 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 turnover. So like a complete mess, disaster at the end. For the same reason we mentioned Duke choked the night before, Houston choked.
Yeah, on a smaller scale, down but yes.
The, yeah, not yeah. to the point scale, or to, but like they choked. Mm-hmm. They had a good halftime lead. They blew it at the end. Their last final, not like, I'm not saying it was like a 25-point halftime lead. They had a nice halftime lead. There or like are the bigger stretch when they got up, what, 12?
12 was it. They were up 12. It really, yeah, halftime was 3 points.
Yeah,
it was,
sorry,
it was
yeah,
12 though in the
right
second half.
Right after halftime, yeah. So 42-30 or whatever they were up at the 1 point. Blew it at the end. Houston blowing it at the end is absolutely part of the story. This is what I find, and like, this is not even to be like, I saw Drew, I saw you, I saw Jeff Goodman, people like other, I saw it more from probably the national basketball people. I thought the style of game was borderline for times unwatchably bad.
Number one defense, number two defense in college
Which,
basketball.
I'll just be honest, that's not the style of any sport I want to watch.
That's
for the
fair.
Same reason, I don't want to watch 12-9 Ravens Steelers in December. Close doesn't mean good to me. And there were big swaths of no scoring in that game, bad offense in that game, or you could call it great defense if you were on the pro defensive side. I thought it was a slog. I thought in the second half, they took that game to a screeching halt.
No, I agree with you on the
referees, and that kind of made it unwatchable at times. So like, I didn't find it to be like an overly enjoyable game until we got to the final, I don't know, four. The under four was not bad.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I understand the complaints. Now, the officiating, I'm not going to argue with you on, because that was absurd in first half compared to second half. But I guess what I'm saying is a lot of these points, replay and referee stuff, is stuff we've all complained about with the sport itself that needs to be corrected.
Yes.
Too many reviews. The officiating is not consistent. Like, that's not unique to last night. Like, the first half, they let them play. First half was awesome. They let them play. And then
the first half was more enjoyable.
They get together at halftime and said, wow, we got to rein this thing in. Whew. And all of a sudden it was foul after foul after foul. I'm not arguing with you on that.
They were the double bonus at like the under 12. I mean, it was like way too early in the game.
Yeah. All I'm saying is the complaints about the game, you could have complained about a January game as well, and a game in February. It was not unique to last night. And the broader point of like the Final Four and how it was chalky and all that, if that was 12 seed versus 1 seed, the game wasn't going to be better than that. That to me was our best case scenario in terms of, other than Duke Florida would have been a more open game. I'm with you, right? Offensively, Duke Florida would have been a more aesthetically pleasing game. Totally with you. But that was the style. Houston and Florida going into the game, we talked about it yesterday. It was, could they shut down Walter Clayton? And they did for a majority of the game until they couldn't right late. And this was going to be about defense. That going in, it was a low total. If we're talking about a betting angle, like, it was a very low total for a game.
I
could have told you that was not going to be like this up and down constant game.
And I'm not saying I came into there just being like, they're just going to run up and down the court. But I mean, look, every possession for like 8 consecutive minutes in the game ended in a foul. And it, like, there's no pace. And if there's no flow to a game, I lose interest in like the pace and the style of the play. Look, I'm not here to argue. Like, I'm not so like insane to be like, yeah, I'd rather have a 20-point FAU beatdown.
Right.
Like, I'm not like, I'd rather a close game than a not close game, but I'd rather stylistically for the game to be enjoyable to watch than, you know, like, I felt like the entire 40 minutes, zero flip. The first half had more.
The first half I actually thought was pretty darn good.
I'll take it back. The final 20 minutes. But like, first half where they're letting them play and all that. But then once the fouls racked up and it was completely out of control. And look, this goes to the broader point of all of college basketball. But that's part of what makes college basketball less enjoyable for me to watch. Your points of,
I agree,
these are things we know about the sport is a problem. Yeah. The other things, go to quarters. So I don't have to watch them from the final part of the game, you know?
I'm with
you.
These are all things, all that I agree with, and most people agree with, and these have been complaints for a couple of years now in college basketball. It needs to be addressed. The quarter thing, people have been saying for like a decade, I think, about men's college
basketball.
Ever
since the women's game, especially, like
everyone else is in quarters, and you're just deciding,
It's the actual in-game stuff down the stretch. Yes, Florida's defense gets some credit, but
a lot of it's X's and O's.
Final three possessions for Houston, they didn't even get a shot off, guys.
I think a lot of it's, I know we're not going to dive into X's and O's, but that's actually what it comes down to. I feel bad for Emmanuel Sharpe. You know,
But he also made a mistake there, Drew. Even if
I feel bad for him.
At least touch the ball and stop the clock, even if it's a turnover. He just stood there and hoped somebody would come and grab the ball.
It's your natural reaction.
I know, but if he touches it, it's a turnover. It's a travel, right? Well, it's a travel. But at least there's, I don't know.
If they call it, maybe they blow it.
2.8 seconds, 2.4 seconds on the clock. So that's something that unfortunately he's going to have to handle and deal with for a very long time.
Back possessions were tough.
I hear you that it schematically give Todd Golden in Florida credit for how they played. But like for Houston to not get a shot off in three of the final three possessions is well, that is bad basketball.
That's what I'm saying. It's not Houston's. I'm saying Houston's X's and O's. It's interesting. Kelvin Sampson after the game, the way that the play was designed was not to get a three necessarily. It was a stagger screen set to get a sharp open, but the play was for him to pump fake and then drive. The thing was, Walter Clayton did an exceptionally good job of closing out.
That kid's a stud.
The screen wasn't set good enough. It's supposed to be, again, two X's and O's, but it's supposed to be an elevator screen where Sharp splits Francis and Roberts. Roberts and Francis slide together to screen collectively. Clayton, two spread out, didn't happen. Clayton closes out. If Emmanuel Sharp pump fakes like the play was designed for, then he's able to either drive or, given Clayton was so into that closeout, he was all in. You have an open shot for the national title if you pump fake and you take your time in that situation. Didn't expect it. It's just tough for Sharp again to have that issue, and then the turnover before where he just tried to do too much on the possession and ended up turning the ball over.
It's going
to
be a tough pill to swallow probably for Houston, knowing that they big held Clayton time. Scoreless.
I know, for 35 minutes or whatever, or 30 minutes.
At halftime.
They held him scoreless for 30 minutes of game time. Like, if you had said that going into the game, you'd been like, oh, we are golden. Like, are you kidding? We're good to go. We're going to hold their leading scorer, one of the best players in the country. We're going to hold him to nothing. Great, guys. No worry there. And LJ Cryer is going to play a lot better than him for a huge chunk of the game and still ended up blowing. They just didn't like Houston going back to it. And this is why they were scrappy and they fought back and they would force teams into bad shots. But like, as somebody pointed out, it's like 10 minutes into the game, they were always going to have to win some slugfest.
Yeah, that was halftime. That was the game they wanted. That was the game Houston wanted. Bigger picture now for Florida. We can get into this more later on in the show, but Todd Golden is now one of the youngest coaches to ever win a title. He's just 39 years old. And Florida's program, you know, for after the Billy Donovan era, like they kind of were irrelevant for a decade. Like they were there. They were pretty irrelevant college basketball program. Now, where does he go in terms of the college coaching hierarchy? You know, we talk about this new era of college basketball and having success. Look how they built that roster there at Florida. They have some guys that have been in the program, but the player we keep mentioning throughout this whole tournament, Walter Clayton Jr., was a guy that came through on a transfer from Iona, and he ended up being the best player on the court last night. Even with 11 points, he was the best player on the court last night. I understand what's his name in the first half.
Will Richard.
Richard was Florida in the game.
Clayton was was facilitating.
He was the most outstanding player. Most outstanding player was Clayton after. But for Todd Golden, it'll be interesting to see watch over the next year or two. I'm not saying they're going back to back or anything, but where does his coaching go from here, and where
he's
is he viewed
top five now, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's amazing. You win one ring and all of a sudden it just changes everything.
Aren't that many coaches who have rings because they end up going other places.
Tom Izzo has one ring. He has as many as Tom Izzo.
But look, we also know that Izzo has been in so many Sweet 16s, been in so many Elite Eights. He gets to be above the board. The real question for Florida will be, can you hold on to him for the long run because you're in the SEC, you're at a big school, or one of these schools, let's just say Hubert Davis is on his ass in a year, which he very well might be. Yeah. They just lost one of their best players. Top freshman in the country.
If let's say in 3 years, Bill Self did retire, if Todd Golden's still doing it, he will be one of the hot names that will be wanting them to hire. The same way we've talked about some other younger coaches in college basketball.
The NBA comes calling they did with Billy Donovan.
Exactly what happened with Billy Donovan.
The question is whether or not, how big of a program can you build with him and hold on to that to construct it. But yeah, I think you immediately have to put him in the top 20 college basketball coach, maybe top 10, depending, right? He's not going to go above any of the guys who deserve to be above him, right? Hurley, Self, Izzo.
Sure.
You know, you don't get to just leapfrog because you win a title at 39 years old. You actually have to follow that up with like multiple trips to the NCAA tournament, continued success.
3 years at Florida. He was at San Francisco before. 3 years at Florida, and he's already got a national championship.
Impressive. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, and the SEC, we had mentioned, they hadn't won a tournament since Florida won it the last time in 06, 07. So they capped off a tremendous year for the SEC basketball. They were the best conference. They put the team through to the championship game.
Let's keep talking coaches, but let's go to the NFL because the folks over at Arrowhead Pride were talking about AFC West coaching, and it's just stacked, right? We've gone over the hirings of now Pete Carroll and then Harbaugh an offseason ago, and you just go through and Reed and Peyton and Harbaugh and Carroll. It's the most stacked division we've ever seen from a coaching legacy standpoint and what these coaches bring to the table. And it was just talking about, you know, is this the makeup? You know, people have been trying different things over the last 8-year run or whatever for the Chiefs. How is it just build up the defensive line? Is it trying to find the quarterback? Of course. Is it we're going to hire Sean Payton? Is this the formula to knock the Chiefs down now? Just you're going to hope that you can, quote unquote, not outcoach them, but at least get a coach that's closer than ever to Andy Reid's level?
I think you had to. I actually think the plan is pretty solid. I'm not promising it will work for any of these teams. Like I saw Geno Smith say, feels like the stars are aligning for the Raiders. I chill a little on that, Geno, but that's fine. You just went with your squad. I'm not saying he can't say it. I'm just saying I don't agree with the comment in which he's saying. But think about the previous plan, which was let's just try to draft the quarterback better than Mahomes. That dream died. Like maybe in the early part of Mahomes, you had some like faint hope that you could just outdraft their situation or out-defense them. And we've seen a couple teams out-defenses was the first plan. That was when the entire division signed Khalil Mack, drafted defensive players. They all went like heavy, heavy, heavy. You know what we're going to do? We're going to stop them the way we've seen some teams in the Super Bowl stop them. We're going to build this elite level defense in the division. We're going to get this defensive minded coach. We're going to grind it out. That didn't work. That wasn't the plan. So now they've all just decided, what do we found future Hall of Fame coaches? And we tried to at least close the gap in the coaching end. And we'll try to close the gap in the quarterback end too. We know we can't close either. It's not the worst. I have to admit, not the worst plan either. What I can't understand is this is the second time in a row that the entire AFC West has decided to go with the same plan together. What are you guys hoping for? That everyone can get one win against the Chiefs and that'll knock them down in the division enough that if we're all competent together, we can get 2 or 3 wins against the Chiefs and make this a bit more of a fight than 6-0 against, like, you know, the Chiefs go 6-0 against us or 5-1 against us every year. And together, collectively, we will be smart enough to like put a dent in this thing. Cause other than that, I can't figure out why they all seem to have the same plan.
Yeah. I mean, there's a slight coincidence, which is when you've been embarrassing, like the Raiders have, you want to bring someone that has some level of respect
and
can raise the floor, even if there's a cap and a ceiling on what Pete Carroll can do in Vegas. And I think there is, and he's also not going to be there for 7 years. I mean, he's going to be there for 3 or 4 years probably and retire. I mean, let's be real. I understand he acts energy wise like he's 50, but he's not. and so he to me is probably a 3 to 5 year coach in Vegas. But
that's why I think they might take Ginty. By the way,
he raises.
They could win right away.
They could and he no doubt because of what he's done throughout his coaching career. Pete Carroll does bring that respectability to the franchise, and I think will prevent them from being a laughing stock. And you can say, well, that's a hell of a bar. Well, that's where they're at. That's how bad the Raiders have been. They have not had competent coaching. They've also made bad decisions. You know, Geno Smith is not great, but he's a hell of a lot better than running out Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. And I understand Gardner Minshew is in Kansas City, but he's a backup.
Significant upgrade.
You know, that there's a difference. And so I actually think that's why the Raiders did it to bring respectability. The Chargers did it because they felt like they were close, and they in their mind they have the quarterback, and they needed a coach to elevate. The Broncos at the time, they were also similar to the Raiders for a couple of years, where it's like, we're a joke. We're getting made fun of. We had Nathaniel Hackett as our head coach. We need to bring in someone that has some respectability that can raise, you know, that can raise our floor. And Sean Payton has done that. So yes, it's the same formula, but it makes sense if you think on an individual level for those franchises. Two of them were laughing stocks, and then one of them in the Chargers just thought they needed a coach to get them over the hump. They haven't got over the hump yet. They also didn't even make they were one and done in the playoffs again. But that was their thought process.
Yeah, I do understand, but like, does it not seem funny to everybody that everyone has the same plan? Like, again, the last time, we talked about this, off-season spinning by the AFC West about 3 years ago. Crazy. They all bought defensive end. They all bought corners. They all did, like, the exact same version of the plan. And then 3 years later, here we go again, and they're all like, yeah, future Hall of Fame coach. We all think that, I don't know if Harbaugh will be in the NFL Hall of Fame, but he'll definitely be in some kind of coaching Hall of Fame. As we'll have to win a Super Bowl probably to get into an NFL Hall of Fame situation. But he, you know, like, elite level coaches, just like guys that are pretty high respected. And then for the guys who can get elite level play, maybe a quarterback, the Herberts of the world. And then everyone else is like, well, what if we get competent play, right? Geno Smith is top 15 quarterback play. We understand we got to get back to it, but to approach it the same way. And I saw Carrington ask the question yesterday, which is just like, who's the worst coach in the division, which is a whole nother way to look at this. It's not Andy Reid.
Well, yeah.
So we can start there. It's probably, oh man,
I think Sean Payton is actually the worst.
I think I'd answer Pete Carroll. That's funny.
I think it's between those two.
Why Harbaugh? What I mean, other than winning a college national championship, which Pete Carroll also did.
What's weird about
Harbaugh's accomplished less in the NFL than the other two.
What's weird about Harbaugh is everywhere
Harbaugh?
What's weird? Everywhere Harbaugh has gone, he has won. But also, after about 4 years, it turns into a disaster. He either leaves them behind with sanctions or just it all falls apart on him. So that's what's weird about his thing. It's like immediately he's going to have success. But I can promise you, in about 3 to 5 years in LA, he's not going to be the head coach.
You're saying maybe it's actually Harbaugh.
I think there's an argument to be made in a very thin gap between the two, or between the other three.
It's close, yeah.
I would say that Sean Payton and Pete Carroll have had more, and they've all had, not equal, because Sean Payton didn't have any collegiate success, but one of them has the same amount of collegiate success as Harbaugh, but one has more NFL success. Now, look, one went to a Super Bowl and lost. We're talking about the difference of, like, one win and one loss, but Pete Carroll went to two and was a more consistent franchise for a longer period of time, to his point, than Harbaugh is, like, we had a few-year run and then it all fell apart, or we had a few-year run in college and then it all fell apart, right? Like, there does seem to be like a cap before Harbaugh's teams. They always get better. The second Harbaugh shows up, his teams are instantly better. But like, there's also like a limit or a cap.
Pete Carroll's got the Super Bowl. Sean Payton's got the Super Bowl. I mean, for some people, you just stop it right there between Harbaugh, Payton,
I guess that's the disparity. Are we talking entire coaching picture just in general as a coach? Because I think Sean Payton, you could argue.
I think in general as a coach.
I think you could argue Sean Payton should have more than. For him to only have one and only one appearance, there's a lot left to be desired for what Sean Payton had, having Drew Brees and all of the resources that he had when, of course, he was there in New Orleans.
Yeah, I mean, I make that argument, but like, I mean,
I think that's
Pete Carroll
looking
at the best years of Russell Wilson, right? I know what we think of Russell Wilson now, but I mean, you got to remember, people thought of Russell Wilson as a top 5 to 7 quarterback for the entirety of the Pete Carroll run.
Sure,
probably. I mean,
so
a pretty good chunk of it.
Does it hurt the argument?
Thought Sean Payton's hurt by the fact that he underperformed considering the circumstances and the talent he had around him. Absolutely. Harbaugh, you could say overperformed because he took, you know, Colin Kaepernick all the way to a Super Bowl. And that guy was out of the league. Look, maybe he should have been in the league longer, but he never got another opportunity in the league.
Yeah.
And there were still some limitations to what you were doing there. So like, but he also didn't do anything other than that, right? Like, they were an okay team outside of that, but they weren't going to other Super Bowls, or, you know, I don't know. He didn't have like the sustained.
It's not like he was
run.
Kyle Shanahan, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
with the
Sean
Niners.
Payton kept going to the playoffs and stuff. It's not like he was just like in the doldrums. They were bad.
This is why it's interesting convo, because on the text line 913-586-7965, a few people bring it up. Of course, the Bounty Gate stuff that was going on while Sean Payton was the head coach, and just like, how much does that? The same way we talk about it with Belichick, how much does that? For some people, that takes you out of the running, right?
I mean, he wasn't cheating. He was just trying to hurt players. Does that make, you know, like, it's not Spygate. It's not cheating to hit players.
It's a scandal. It's a scandal, but
it doesn't affect the play on the field, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because in a way it does. Like, you're like, if any coach was allowed to do that, then would that have got better performance out of players? I don't know.
Right.
For Pete Carroll, unfortunately, a lot of people will always bring up not running the ball at the goal line in the Super Bowl with Marshawn Lynch, but he still got a ring. You know, he should have two of them. That's the kind of stuff that will haunt coaches and their legacies for a long, long time. The point is, the AFC West is loaded with coaching talent, and we're going to find out if it's enough to close the gap. I still think, going back to the bigger picture Chiefs narrative of the offseason, it is still fascinating to me, even pre-draft, that so many outside of Kansas City have just acted like the Chiefs have fallen off a cliff because they got their ass kicked in the Super Bowl, forgetting they won 15 games, forgetting that they actually, if you look at the roster and what they potentially may be able to do in the draft, the same question at offensive line is there, yes. But the idea, like, they're just now going to fall off and win 10 games and they're just not a factor in the conversation is hilarious to me. Like, fall off? They're probably not winning 15 games next year. No
kidding.
It's not
kidding. Like Chris Jones retired, you know?
It's not. Yeah. Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid are still there. Like, last time I checked. They're going to have Rice.
Actually, technically, they should have a better receiver unit than they had a year ago. Yeah. And the running backs are at the very worst the same.
Correct. So I don't get the narrative with that, but you're going to hear more and more noise all offseason about this is the year, this is the year, this is the year for Sean Payton or for Harbaugh to get the Chiefs and win the division, and that'll be the fun part of the year, right, to see if the Chiefs can prevent that from happening, even though some of the betting markets still have the Chiefs. Those betting markets still have the Chiefs winning the division. Those betting markets still have the Chiefs as like the second or third best odds or whatever it is to win the Super Bowl. But I'm just talking about the narrative that's out there, a lot of national publications, talking heads, et cetera.
Yeah, I think in Kansas City we're a little more reasoned about it, but that goes back to the same thing as like I felt like I was getting in arguments with national media or like even other people who were upset with the Chiefs. I'm like, hey, just to be very clear, it is better to go to the Super Bowl and get your ass kicked than lose a close game in the divisional round in the AFC title game. It is better. You have done better to go to the final game and get your ass kicked than I played a close one in the wild card round. Your season didn't end better because you didn't get embarrassed in the final game of the season. I guess maybe it was easier to sleep at night versus just being like, honestly, it wasn't that hard to sleep at night. It's actually easier to get over the ones that they just like absolutely ruin you in a lot of ways, other than for the Chiefs case, they were going for a three-peat, which definitely hurts. Because it goes back to the other thing you're just talking about, like the people were doubting him. They're in the middle of a back-to-back-to-back Super Bowl trips with two wins. Like, I don't think I'm going to be counting out the Chiefs anytime soon. Thanks.
Up next, we're going to talk some Royals baseball. They're off to a 5-5 start, 10 games into this 2025 season. We'll be joined by the executive vice president and general manager of the Royals, J.J. Piccolo. I want to ask him about what has changed for Chris Bubich, who is off to an unbelievable start. Plus, we'll talk about the back end of that bullpen next here on Cody and Gold.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
If you have a locked AT&T phone, we're here with bolt cutters. T-Mobile will help pay off your locked phone and give you a new 5G phone for free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrier freedom.
Via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax and a $10 device connection charge. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement as due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday.
Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
First pitch to Isbell, and he hits it high in the air, deep to right field. Wallner turns around, watches it fly into the bullpen. A solo shot for Kyle Isbell.
Jake Eisenberg on the call last night right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan, and throughout the season. Like we have the last couple of years, we're always excited to have the general manager and executive vice president of the Royals, JJ Piccolo, join us every couple of weeks here on Cody and Gold. JJ, good morning. Appreciate you coming on the show. Let's just start for the first time really since it's opening day, obviously. 5-5, 10 games in. It's very early, but Chris Bubich, at least as far as we're concerned, maybe the biggest positive we've seen from you guys this portion of the season. What's really changed for him? We saw how dominant he was in the bullpen last year, but now back in the rotation.
To be honest with you, I don't think anything's really changed. I mean, prior to his injury, he was in our rotation, and those first couple starts before he got hurt, we thought he had really turned the corner. He added the slider, which was a pitch that he always wanted to throw, and he sort of perfected it over the offseason. And just when we thought he was ready to be a, you know, a regular in our rotation, he gets injured. So last year, I think we were just really fortunate that he was able to get back and not only pitch in the major leagues, but pitching the role that he pitched in, because there's a lot of high leverage innings, some back-to-back outings, which is difficult on a guy coming off of, you know, a Tommy John and a rehab. But very honestly, part of our confidence in being able to acquire Indian using a starting pitcher was the presence of Chris Bubich. And his first two starts have been outstanding.
How do you handle like the long-term play with it? Let's just say he's going to pitch like this all year, which would make him a Cy Young candidate. But like, if he pitches at the level you guys thought he could do, how do you handle it so you get to let him pitch in September or October? At times you might really also want him, you know?
Yeah, I think that's going to be something we're going to have to play out through the season. You know, it's hard to predict. I mean, there's going to be times during the season where, yeah, he's going to get a little bit fatigued. And if we had the opportunity to skip a start, you know, with an off day in there, the All-Star break will factor in. But, you know, one thing that's really hard to account for is what his workload was really like last year. Because when you count his innings from the time he was in Arizona rehabbing through his rehab in Omaha, he pitched about 80 innings. And how do you account for the, you know, the short spurts where he throws 3 out of 4 or 3 out of 5? And how do you translate that into actual innings as a starter? That's a really difficult thing to do. So we're just going to play it start to start. You know, there's really not a lot of concern of getting him through the season. It's just a matter of how do we read it and how is he feeling? And if he's feeling good, we don't have any reason to hold him back. We're going to keep, I don't want to say push him, but we're going to keep allowing him to pitch and not think of the glass half empty. You know, the glass is half full for Chris. He's really moving in the right direction, and we're excited for it. How he feels in August will probably determine how we go about getting him some rest along the way.
Chris Bubich, obviously been a huge positive 10 games in. Overall, just to this point, what do you make of what you've seen from your team coming out of spring training and starting the first couple games?
I think, you know, I'm glad we're 5-5, you know, just the way we start out swinging the bats. But, you know, the bats coming to a little bit, but I thought the consistency and the approach that we had over the last 3 or 4 games is what we expect. We had some scoring opportunities. We didn't capitalize, but we still managed to win the game. But when you look at our starting pitching, our bullpen, our defense, and our lineup, you know, it's a pretty good team. You know, not ready to say it's the greatest team baseball's ever seen, but, you know, we're in a good spot because the pitching is going to keep us in games. And, you know, if we're ahead after 6 or 7 innings, we got a pretty good chance to win the game with the way the back of our bullpen's set up right now.
I guess, yeah, that's really what it is. You mentioned pitching. I think a lot of times people go to the starting end of it. I think we ran the numbers earlier, including Daniel Lynch. So if we include him in the Harvey, Urseg, Estevez combo, they've gone almost 21 innings and have only allowed a single earned run. I imagine that this is kind of exactly what you were praying for, JJ, when you were building the back end of the bullpen this offseason?
Yeah, no, we want, you know, you want to, if you have a lead, you want to lock down that win. And I think we have the makings, not only, you know, with the three that have been thrown the 7th, 8th, and 9th, but you mentioned Daniel. Let's not forget about Zerpa. You know, those guys can pitch in high leverage situations. So not only is it some power at the end of the pen, but we can match up a little bit too, having two lefties that we're not afraid to use. And Sam Long has been in high leverage. You know, last year, you know, I was reminded the other day, you know, it was in September and October that we were going to Sam Long in the seventh inning, the eighth inning. So, you know, let's not forget him as well. So, it, you know, there's balance there. And that's what I think we're most excited about is we have options. You know, like tonight's a night where, you know, those back three have thrown 3 out of 4 days. And that's difficult on guys. So we'll have to see how the game goes. But tonight's a night where somebody else is going to have to step up and maybe finish the game for us, because this is about, you know, the long run, not just the short term. And, you know, these are where guys – take advantage of opportunities when we get into situations like tonight, and they solidify themselves as a big part of our pen.
I've seen some like interview quotes, I think with Annie Rodgers and a few others, Daniel Lynch talking about high leverage. We're like, I wouldn't call it laissez-faire, but like seem like he's not pushing you guys into, no, I want more and more and more of that yet. What has kind of his attitude been about like earning those opportunities or taking advantage of those? Because last year, he wasn't in the highest leverage for you. To begin this year, you guys obviously have those three at least that would seemingly be ahead of him for those spots. How is he handling, like, you know, asking for those opportunities or expecting what to do with them? Is it just about when he gets in that spot, making sure he does it well?
Yeah, I think it's more about just seizing the opportunity. When he gets into those situations, go ahead and perform like he has. I think the mindset's got to be the same. Just because you're throwing maybe the eighth inning, you know, it's different, but it needs to be the same approach as if he's throwing the sixth inning, because the sixth inning often determines what's happening in the eighth inning. So all of those innings are important. So when guys get opportunities like that, we don't want them to change anything they're doing. You know, it's really the same three outs you got to get. And if a guy can keep a clear mind and approach the eighth like he approaches the sixth, he's probably going to have success. Now that's easier said than done, because we all know the game gets heightened as you get deeper in the game. But the reality is, you don't even know where you might be in the lineup. You know, you might be towards the bottom third in the lineup when you get that opportunity in the eighth. So that may be easier in the eighth than the sixth if you're facing 3, 4, 5. So every situation's a little bit different, but we don't want Daniel or anybody to change your mindset. Compete for those three outs like it's the ninth inning, because every inning can determine the outcome of the game.
We're talking to Royals General Manager and Executive Vice President J.J. Piccolo here on 96.5 The Fan. Obviously, MJ Melendez at the plate hasn't gotten off to the start that he would have liked, that you guys would have liked necessarily, but are you seeing over the last game or two anything different from him, at least when he steps into the batter's box? Is he getting closer?
Yeah, I think he is. And even though, you know, regardless of what the batting average is, I think over the last four games, he's got on base 6-7 times in that area. But I think he's made a little bit, you know, a change. I can't really, you know, say I'm 100% sure, but it looks like his bat angle is a little bit different, where he's starting, and he's on time a little bit more. The ball he hit last night was as good of a swing as anyone can take. I mean, a little more elevation, that ball's out. So that was a good at bat. The walk was a good at bat. You know, one at bats he struck out, you know, I probably shouldn't say it, but I don't know where that pitch was.
And, it was definitely, you know, a ball.
he's competing well in that at bat. So that's why we try not to get too result oriented. That at bat was pretty good. It didn't end the way we wanted it to end, but it was still pretty good at bat. So really, three out of his four at bats last night were good. And guys need to gain confidence. And last night should be a big confidence booster for MJ. And even, you know, the prior 2 days, I thought he did some good things in the batter's box.
What about Mikel Garcia? We, you know, going into the season, we were trying to figure out, like, is he not like positionless, but with India and Massey and some of these guys playing outfield and infield, weren't really sure where it fits. I guess first, how do you view him in center, and is moving around taking the pressure off the plate? Did he change things in his approach? And we didn't talk about it as much, because obviously he's off to a good start offensively.
Yeah, well, when Mikel's swinging the bat the best, it's when he's using the whole field, and even more so to the right center field gap. That way, when his bat and his swing is geared to go in that direction, he usually stays over the ball longer. His bat stays in the zone, and he hits line drives. I mean, he hit three balls on the nose last night. I mean, the first one was really good because there was a man on second, and he had fouled a ball off before that, and he's trying to shoot that ball to right field. Then he gets a pitch that's up a little bit, and he hits a line drive to right field for a single. That's when you know he's going good. He did that in the playoffs last year in Baltimore, New York. He did it early in the year last year. So I think for us, the challenge with Mikel is just trying to continually remind him that you need to use the whole field. He hit the homer early at home that was pull, and I was really anxious to see what he would do the next games, and he hit the home run to dead center. That's a great sign. But you know what he's doing? That's we love this. We want this from every player. Positionality is a little bit questionable. Like, where is he going to play every night? But right now he's forcing us to put him in the lineup every night, and that's what we want. So luckily he can play positions, and to answer your other question, there is already improvement in center field. That ball he ran down in right center the other day, I'm not so sure he makes that play, two, 3 weeks ago while we're still in spring training, but he had a beat on that ball. He was calling run for off the whole way. He knew he was on it. He makes a nice running catch. And I think as time goes on, those catches will look even easier because he's going to get better jumps, better reads. He's going to accelerate. And when he gets to the point where he's catching the ball, he's not still going to be moving. He's going to be there and, catching the ball more to his side than on the run. So he's athletic. He's going to be able to do a lot of things for us defensively. And we all believe he's going to excel at whatever position he plays.
10 games in, I don't know how many of these pregame ceremonies you've had for different awards. I'm sure it doesn't get old doing that. Are you guys done yet? I feel like there's been 7 of them for some of your guys.
Well, the first day we did it, we won the game. So the next day I was down there, the guys started asking me if I was superstitious. I said, no, it's just another pregame. And then we lost that game. So when I showed up the third day, they're like, beat it, get out of here. So, but no, it's nice. A lot of that stuff is happening early in the season, and Bobby had asked him on the field at one point, are you tired of getting these awards? He said, no, keep them coming. So it's a good thing. I think it's great for our fans. I mean, Salvi got that Roberto Clemente Award at the World Series last year, but he got a nice standing ovation. I mean, of all the awards in baseball, that is arguably the best award because it speaks about who the person is. And then obviously Salvi's really talented as well, but it was nice to see our fans recognize him and give him a standing ovation for all the great things he does off the field. And it's what we want our players to be.
JJ, I want to ask you about just one minor league player because our listeners ask us about him. I know I'm going to ask about Jack Caglione. It's only 3 games in, so I don't want to ask about performance in general. Just what organizationally for a player like him do you guys want to see at AA to know that he's ready to progress at AAA? So, like, what are the things specifically the organization is looking for him to do?
I probably thought you were going to ask him about somebody else. So,
Carter Jensen. Hey, he's had a good start too,
Jack. Yeah, absolutely he has. He's been great. I think with Jack, I mean, it's really hard to, explain and understand. It's the quality of the bats guys are taking and who is he facing? Is he facing a quality, pitcher that can make pitches similar to the pitches that he's going to be facing in the major leagues? What's he doing against left-handed pitchers and what type of a bat is he taking there? We know he's got power. I mean, like for him to hit a ball the way he did in Tulsa, that's not surprising to us. But the very next day with 2 strikes, he hits a line drive to left center field. Another bat, he was down 0-2 and he walks. That's more important to us in trying to determine how ready he is for the major leagues than seeing him hit a hanging breaking ball 460 feet. That he's going to do that, but it's how he handles his at-bats, what he does with 2 strikes. Does he recognize situations to get the run in because he's going to be in that category of run producer. But it's not going to be a small sample that we're going to make that determination. It's going to be a large sample. And, we haven't determined, is it 100 at-bats, 500 at-bats? We just have to have an instinct. We have people watching him every night. We have reports from the coaches every night. There is another step for him to take, and that's called AAA before he even gets to the major league. So, that's what we're looking for. We want to see the quality of the bat, the consistency, because we know one thing, it's a lot harder here in the major leagues because the pitchers are the elite of the elite, and we got to put him in the best position to handle that. So when he comes up, he never goes back, and that's the best way to handle players.
Well, I can tell you, he hasn't done anything to this point that hasn't calmed the fan base's excitement, which no. is that's something we get texts every single day about, which is fun, right? I mean, that's people should be excited.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, shoot, he's got one of the best prospects in the game. I mean, and that is exciting. So, you know, I'm glad. I mean, I'm being very candid. I love when our fans are talking about the Royals, whether it's good, bad, one player, the whole team. That's what we do this for. We want our fans talking about what we have going on. And I think it's great that they're talking about Cags, and we are too, you know, but they're, you know, we're also watching everybody else. You know, you mentioned Carter Jensen. I mean, he's off to a great start as well. And Gavin Cross, and, you know, that team has got something. You know, they got a lot of offensive ability on that team. They're scoring a ton of runs, and that's fun to watch. But again, with every one of those guys, it's all about the process and how their bats and how they are going and how they mature as a player, you know, to determine if they're ready in the major leagues. All of these guys in the major leagues did great things in Double A. If you go back and look at every one of our players, they've all done great things in Double A, and that's the perspective that we've got to keep.
JJ Piccolo, Royal General Manager, always appreciate it. We'll check in here in a couple weeks.
All right, guys. Thank you.
There you go. That's JJ Piccolo, Royals Executive Vice President, General Manager. He'll be joining us as he has the last couple years throughout the season. We'll be checking in not only at the big league club, but yeah, we'll be asking him a little bit about
large
what we're seeing.
Large sample size, he said.
Yeah, large sample size. But yeah, I mean, the excitement, nobody's saying not to be excited. Nobody's that at all.
I'm saying he's not getting called up tomorrow.
You know, it's not happening in 10 days. Probably not happening in 30 days. Probably not, you know what I mean? Like, just, you know, and enjoy it. And we'll be keeping an eye. We've got our Jack Watch thing we're doing. By the way, if you're wondering, they did not play yesterday.
They're off. Minor League Double A is off every single Monday.
Well, they're bussing,
travel.
Man. They're not flying. They're bussing. So
they play six consecutive days against the same team, take Mondays off, then play the next 6 days against a different team, then take Monday off in perpetuity. Now, one other player he had mentioned in there, and I'm not here to tell you, problem solved, don't worry. I do think, for as early enough as it is in the season, and I said the first month was really important for him, MJ has looked more comfortable the last two or three games. Is it problem solved? MJ is fixed? No, I'm not trying to pretend like it just erases how the season started, when he kind of looked lost at the plate early on. But the swing he mentioned on the double last night, that ball was smoked. That was the best swing he's taken legitimately all season long. The best swing he's taken. And so the fact that he's walking a little bit, getting on base a little bit, hitting for a little bit more power, like, okay,
get some confidence. I mean, can you get some confidence?
Yeah,
going?
Time to get started. Like, no more just like, let's start to make the at-bats look good. Now results need to follow, but like, he has looked more comfortable the last two or three games.
Yeah, the Royals back at it tonight. Game 11 of the season tonight against the Minnesota Twins. Vern's On Deck show starts, 5:30 again, I believe, tonight right here on 96.5 The Fan. We'll talk some more baseball, and specifically that bullpen here in 10 minutes or so. We asked JJ about what they're getting from the back end of the bullpen, and it's been stellar. It's everything you were hoping you would see already at that back end. But tonight, not everybody's going to be available, so somebody else is going to have to step up, or another two, three guys might have to step up. Hopefully the Royals in their spot. Obviously, with the lead they need to protect late in the game this evening. Before we get back to the Royals, though, there's kind of an interesting thing going on, I'll call it behind the scenes with
football. It was happening
football.
At the annual meetings. You know, they were getting tense.
With football, we know the Summer Olympics are coming up in 2026, I think it is as well, out in L.A., and there's discussion, or 2028, I'm sorry, 2028, and flag football is going to be part of it.
And we don't have to joke about the guy who's like, I'd be better than any quarterback in the league, and then we watch his highlights.
I forgot about that guy.
Do you remember
forgot
his name?
About
Do you remember
guy.
His name?
Yeah.
Turns out he's like 5'4", 140 pounds, and he's like, I'm going to dominate flag football.
And we know Patrick Mahomes and other NFL players are like, hey, I kind of want to be part of this. The league office, though, does want that to happen. Okay, so you're like, okay, this is great. But the owners are like, whoa, we're... They're being a little more cautious with this entire thing. And Mike Florio, in some of his reporting, said that down at the annual meeting, the league sees it as an opportunity for marketing, right? Market the brand globally. This is great. The owners are like, whoa, we don't want our star player that we're forking over X amount of money to getting hurt.
Oh, and missing part of training camp, hypothetically. Mm-hmm.
The Olympics are July 14th through July 30th of 2028. And any player who's participating, you're definitely going to miss part of training camp during that. I get the injury concern. That was my number one thing.
Robert Edwards got hurt in one.
It's not just because Robert Edwards
flag football game.
I think I get why the players want to be part of it,
and
I
do think you win a gold medal,
and that's something you know that you just I don't think you can deny. Let's say Patrick Mahomes. I don't think you can deny Patrick Mahomes the opportunity for that. But
agreed.
But I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you I'm terrified, and I would be of any fan base and owner as well that my quarterback, because we're just going to go with the most important position on the field. My quarterback, who I have $300 million or pick any quarterback guaranteed in, that quarterback gets hurt and misses the whole season because of the Olympics. That does terrify me.
In a way I understand. I really do. But it's flag football. The easiest, I'm not saying you can't get hurt just running, but they would be running anyway. They would be running at training camp. They would be running routes at training camp. It is the identical way they could get hurt in the team facility. Do I understand? You get control. You have control. Mm-hmm. You like it. It's jogging. I
just can't imagine. Are the Chiefs really going to, I know they can tell him not to play basketball.
You
think Brett Veach and the Chiefs are going to actually tell Patrick Mahomes, let's say he's the quarterback that gets the opportunity. You're going to tell him that he can't go play for his country for a gold medal. During training camp for a week or two. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. We're not going to know the answer to this for another year and a half, 2 years. At least, but yeah. That's going to be an interesting dynamic. How do some teams handle that? And by the time that happens, Patrick Mahomes will be what, 32? Is that right? 32, 33, something like that.
But when you look at it, someone's like, hey, gold medal in flag football is F tier gold. They said swimming, gymnastics better. I'm not saying the athletic accomplishment. I'll just be honest with you, though. If some of the best NBA athletes became gymnasts, they'd probably be very successful because of the level of athlete that they are. I don't know why you would prevent, because I'll just say, Patrick Mahomes standing on the medal stand to win gold medal for the U.S. And the advertisement for your franchise on that is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
The NBA lets him play. And I know it doesn't directly
conflict.
All the
leagues let him play. NHL.
All the leagues. So you're the only one.
MLB lets him do the World Baseball Classic.
And they're taking away, in the NBA, I can still box out, shove somebody, push. The physicality of the game doesn't even change. In flag football, I'm taking away the single most dangerous part of the sport to do it for the gold medal.
Yeah, I don't
it's actually
think you
better
can,
than all the others.
I get the concern, but I don't believe you can tell a Mahomes, a Josh Allen, or a Tyreek Hill, or Justin
anyone,
Jefferson, any of them, right? Like that, we think of the top players at their respective positions. Are you going to tell them they can't go and represent their country for truly a once in a lifetime opportunity? That's really, really tough to imagine. But the NFL also does operate differently than everybody else. And they hold themselves to a much different standard in their mind, right? So I don't know, man. I don't think this is a sure thing that they're going to allow them to do it. It's obviously the balance of what are the owners getting out of it, too? Because the league wants it, but the owners, who are ultimately the boss of the commissioner and the boss of the league office, are saying, we're not so sure. And how many players are we talking about, though, in all honesty? Are we talking about 10 players being affected by this?
20, I would say.
It
might be more than that. I don't know how many, because this works in the Olympics. It's if you got any kind of nationality connection, but you're not good enough to get on the USA team,
fair.
You'll be Mark Thiem played for Team Canada. He grew up in the
U.S. You're right. It's probably 30 to 50, actually.
Yeah, it's a little more than you think, because if your grandma came from Italy, or you can go play for Team Italy, whatever. They'll find, works. They'll find other countries to represent in the Olympics. But I the quarterback's in particular the most interesting one, because let's say Mahomes is the quarterback for Team USA. There's still other quarterbacks who are incredibly talented. I got to think Lamar Jackson would be the number one overall pick for flag football. If you can run.
Yes. Lamar Jackson's the guy. Yes.
I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes is not the best quarterback on the planet. I'm just saying, if you're letting me choose any quarterback for flag football, and after 3 seconds he's allowed to run, Lamar, please.
Someone on the text line from the 816 says, they're not gold loading his dryer. Let them play. They won't get hurt. That's true. They are professional.
How's the back?
Worse.
Worse?
Yeah, it's not good.
Oh, gold. No.
This is the second day, though, right? It's always worse than the second day.
This happened Sunday night.
It's always worse the second day.
It's happened Sunday night. And in the middle of the night, I didn't sleep great last night. It stiffened up way more. It did. The back is not great.
I think you need to go see somebody to work on it a little bit.
I'm going to give it another day or so, but it's not good.
Today.
Yeah, it's just I can walk, obviously. You guys have seen it. But
yeah, you're walking.
Just sitting down right now, it's a pretty constant,
pretty constant pain?
Pain,
You need a brace.
It's not great. I don't know. I need something, man. I need
might
something.
Might have some ibuprofen in the bag. I can't say for sure.
I took some a leave before I came into work today. But I don't know, man. I don't know what the hell happened.
Going down.
I was hoping it just get better here in a day or two.
That's not what being old.
Have you stretched it at all?
No, I haven't done anything.
Oh, well.
Other than heating pad and a leave.
Someone said it needs to be wet heat, is what they said on the text line yesterday.
Yeah, they said that it dry. Yeah,
I'll be honest. I don't know if that's accurate or not. Do not listen to me. I don't know.
That sounded a lot like the scene from Major League, like the hot ice. That's it sounded like a lot of hot ice to me. But anyway, I don't know. Up next, let's talk more about the back end of the bullpen, though, that we were talking with JJ about. And is this going to be the next great 1, 2, 3, or 4 in the bullpen that we talk about for years to come? I'm not so sure yet, but we'll at least talk about it. And a huge shift is on the way in collegiate sports. That's next.